As Ed mentioned this morning in his lovely Dharma talk on the oak tree in the garden, the assignment for people giving talks for this Ango is to pick out some koan that has some particular resonance, perhaps some particular difficulty or particular attraction. And to do this for me has been to delve back into these lovely collections of koan that we have. Here in the Boundless Way, we follow a koan curriculum that progresses, although she progresses, a funny word in this case, maybe moves from through several different collections. And these koans, as we've said, are teaching stories, quite unique to the Zen school, although stories like every spiritual tradition has used, every human enterprise has used stories. We use stories to talk about who we are. We use stories to talk about what is meaningful. We are storytelling creatures. And these koan can be appreciated in any number of ways. And one way is, as we're doing, in a sense, to pick up any one particular koan and enter in. If you begin to study koan here in the Boundless Way School, you would move from one to the other to the other. As some of our speakers have alluded to, it's not a matter of a passing or not passing, but of entering into our life through the particular story, and each one of these koan is about us. It's not about someone else, not about some people who lived thousands of years ago, but about our very life. So there's one koan that I came across that that I haven't thought about for a while, but as I read through it again, all of these associations came up. They're a little bit like songs, you know, that you associate with particular periods of your life. Oh yeah, I was in junior high school when the Beach Boys sang, you know, and so there's a kind of a memory, a sense memory for me of some of these koans that I've picked up at various times. And this one I first encountered with our first teacher, Richard Clark, and then worked on with my teacher, George Bowman, for quite a while. And it's case 8 in the Mumon Khan. Shi Cheng builds carts. The case. The priest Yuan said to a monk, Shi Cheng made 100 carts. If you take off both wheels and the axle, what would be vividly apparent? The priest Yuan said to a monk, Shi Cheng made 100 carts. If you take off both wheels and the axle, what would be vividly apparent? Wu Men's comment, if you realize this directly, your eye is like a shooting star, and and your act is like snatching a bolt of lightning. Wu Men's verse, where the wheel revolves, even a master cannot follow it. The four cardinal half points above, below, north, south, east, and west. So apparently a story about a cart maker. We an automaker, maybe we translate it. So what's vividly apparent in your car when the transmission falls out and the wheels fall off and the doors come off their hinges? From the literal perspective, we can say, well, the car is broken, you know. These stories, of course, are about us. So as we look deeper, this man who made 100 carts, he's reputed mythologically, he is the inventor of the cart, the wheel and the cart. Quite a wonderful invention, quite a practical thing to carry heavy loads from one place to the next. But this cart, of course, is none other than our self, our essential self. What happens when the axle and the wheel are taken away? So I think, how is it when things are taken away from me? Recently, I've been doing a very advanced practice called the flu practice. And I had a special, my koan was flu type B. It did take away a lot of things that I was familiar with. These changes that come on us, that we would not choose, but that are unavoidable. The changes of birth and life and loss and change. These things come. And the teaching of Buddha is that these are noble things. Changes, we might say they are the vicissitudes of life. And of course, we all in some way long for a life with no problems. A life with no illness, a life with no loss. But the Buddha's first teaching is that this very fact of human life, that things happen, that we do get sick, that these bodies, these miraculous bodies do wear out, that this is not the first problematic truth. This is not the first problem of life. But this is the teaching of the noble truth of dukkha. This encountering of our life. Sometimes I talk with people about places that they're stuck, about changes they're wanting or changes they're not wanting. And one of the things that I remind them of and remind myself of is that the particular content of the difficulty of the moment is not so important. Because once you solve this difficulty, there will be another difficulty. It is the true koan curriculum of life. In the Boundless Way tradition, once you solve one koan, your great reward is to get another koan. And so you might feel bad that you're stuck on a particular one, but you'll just be stuck on the next one, so there's no matter there. And as human beings, we're always somewhat stuck. Or if we're not stuck in the moment, we will be in the next moment. So often, this stuckness or this loss or this problem appears to be what we need to get over to begin our life. So for me, in the flu practice, my main symptom was just total exhaustion and just lying in bed. And for me anyway, for the first couple days, I'm really pretty zen. You know, it's like, okay, I'm just sick. I give in, but at some point, and it's embarrassingly quick, I get impatient, and I get scared, because there is some me that I am familiar with. There is a certain level of energy or a certain way I feel. And when I get sick, I think when we all get sick, when we suffer, one of the things we lose is the person that we thought we were. This is a real problem. The other night in one of our Dharma dialogues, one of us, we were talking about the problematic self and how sometimes we're really critical of ourselves. And one of us said, actually, I'm pretty attached to myself. I kind of like myself. Although most of us complain about ourselves and wish we were different and think we might be, should be better at this or that, we are all, each one of us, quite attached to the story of ourself. Each one of us has made a wonderful cart, the cart of ourself. And we keep trying to nail it together to make little improvements. Maybe we get some baseball cards to put in the spokes so that when the wheels go, it goes bup, 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 bup. Or we want the streamers from the handlebars or whatever. We're continually hoping to improve this cart. But, of course, the cart is always breaking down. This breakdown, this place where it doesn't go according to plan, this is the true place of opportunity. This opportunity to open to something beyond our idea. All of us have made a fairly accurate mental map of the world, and we function as if the world is really the same as the idea we have of the world. All of our maps work well enough to get us here this evening. We figured out how to plan our time, how to do what we needed to do. So these maps that appear to describe reality are actually not reality itself. As we sit, we can begin to see perhaps some chinks in the story. We can see that this world that we construct is not the true world. Melissa and I were talking to a friend the other day, and he was talking about some difficult situation, and he said, well, the facts on the ground are, and then he proceeded to tell his story. And he was very convinced that this was not a story. It was just clear that this person was giving him trouble and did this and it meant that. But we perceive our stories as reality. And as human beings, most of the time we cannot see our story. We cannot, the story is hidden from us. When we look out in the world, we are not aware that seeing is waves of light that hit cones in our eyes that fire off and send pulses to the visual cortex, and the visual cortex sorts through other memories and from that creates some meaning from what we see. We look out and say, oh, that's a car. But this reality that appears so vivid and that we so believe in and that causes us to suffer so greatly is actually a construction. And so when your construction, when your idea of who you are supposed to be, or your idea, my idea of how my life is supposed to be, when it is taken away, when my story, when my familiar sensations, and they're replaced by things I don't like. What then? I have an older friend who has been forced to retire from work that he truly loved. He was a teacher and would travel to do his teaching, and for many, many years did this work. And about 2 years ago, he was forced to retire. He had a stroke, and he's well up in his 80s now, has trouble getting around. And it has been very difficult for him, as it would be for me, it will be for all of us, to let go of this one who he was. Now, when he speaks, it's just his wife there, and occasionally some others of us, but no longer is he the wise teacher. And he wonders who he is now. As with my flu practice, I lie in bed and wonder, who am I if I'm not productive, if I'm not doing what I think I should do? Who am I? In Zen, we place great value on this kind of interruption of life. And these koan, in some way, are artificial is the wrong word, but are intentional disruptors. I can see so the doctors could prescribe, well, take two koans and go to bed and see if you can understand the nature of life. You'll feel worse in the morning. we come here to disrupt ourselves. The mindless forward momentum of our life is so fierce. This self, we can say, oh yeah, I'm going to let go of myself. And then the self creates a great plan. Oh yeah, that's great. Let's get rid of the self. That other self, that's no good. And so the self wants to participate. in getting rid of itself, and then we get all tangled up, creating head upon head upon head. So we can't do it that way. So we come here for this evening. We come here for today, for this kalpa, this moment. And we come here and we sit in stillness. And we do nothing. We are actively, as Rinzai said, do nothing. We are practicing being useless. The other image that came up for me as I was thinking about some of this is our daughter Rachel. When first she and Melissa came home from the hospital, she was 4 or 5 days old, and we had her in one of those carrier things, and we brought her in and set her down, and I vividly remember set her down on the living room floor and sat on the couch and said, "What do we do with her now?" She was totally useless. You could talk to her, but and yet it was also clear nothing had ever been more precious in our whole life than this useless being. We so often think that we have some value because of what we do. It's so ingrained in so many of us. If I am good enough, if I am strong enough, if I help people enough, then I'll be worthwhile. But our zazen is the interruption. We are sitting not being worthwhile. And the invitation is to notice what becomes vividly apparent when you stop being you, when you stop doing you. Now, you can't intentionally do that because that's just more doing. So maybe it's more like when you are bringing yourself back to the breath again and again, and when you get so tired of the old story of your mind, when the tape run is on 10,432, and you think you just sometimes, if you're lucky, sometimes you just lose interest. Maybe just not so interesting. Maybe there's something more important. And so our practice is not mechanical, and it is not based in our will, but is based in our intention and based in our heart. And the promise is, and the invitation is, that there is something that is vividly apparent right now. What is it? What is it when you let everything be? What is it when you sit with whatever sensations, emotions, thoughts are here? What is it when you break down and you are lost? What is it when you can't move? What is vividly apparent for you? I wonder. Thank you. So now is the time for our Dharma dialogue, so I'd invite you to sit comfortably and ask Melissa questions about what I said. questions or observations about the talk or about practice?
Practice like you're too sick to care. It kind of reminded me of that, and I remember having been very sick before, and you know, you lose control of your body and your sense of smell and taste and maybe being able to see or whatever, and you're just solely intent on functioning and getting through. Your discursive mind kind of stops and you see, oh, what's there? Who is this that's continuing on through the day? And then you really see, you strip away everything, but that's it. That at the core of your being, that energy that just propels you without thought through everything, it seems. It's, you know, the sick you are, it becomes quite clear at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That's like the question. It's been forever. You know, your whole life, oh, who am I? Who am I? Mm-hmm. You know, oh, well, you're nobody. I mean, you're everybody, but no.
Yeah, the answers to these questions that we carry with us come at unexpected times, you know, when we're just maybe just struggling to get through, and suddenly something becomes, there's something functioning that that we're too exhausted that it couldn't be me, but yet something here. Yeah. Thank you.
It does remind me of the Ango last year, because I got sick during the Ango.
That's right.
And whenever I think of last year's Ango, all I think of is trudging up and down the stairs with the bell ringing, feeling horrible. All I could do is ring the bell. It's a glorious Ango, but I most vividly remember.
Everything gets very simple.
It was, yes. Yeah.
Go to bed.
Yeah.
You know, I was, when you were talking about little 5-day-old Rachel lying on the living room rug, and two of us sitting there watching her, I have that vivid memory too. Yeah. And she, you know, she couldn't lift her head, she couldn't talk, she couldn't tell jokes, she couldn't. Yeah. she could barely cry. Yeah. She could blink her eyes.
Yeah, right.
There wasn't a lot going on. And in a wonderful way, I, as you were saying that, I thought, oh, that's what we're all doing. We're like replicating. There is nothing to do in Sasan. You just sit here. This is the living room rug. And we don't lie on our backs, you know, cooing in our blankets. That would be enough. We could. but we do, you know, we sit in Sasan and we don't have to accomplish anything. We don't have to do anything. And that is so radical. Because, as you were pointing out, we, you know, usually we're doing something and then we're planning what we're going to do next, and we're planning. It's the nature of the mind, it's the nature of language. We just keep going, we're always anticipating what's going to happen. But when you're really down to it, and all you can do is just go up and down the stairs, ring the bell, then you know, it feels like a problem only because the mind says we should be doing more. And that little baby on the floor didn't have, I don't think she had thoughts. Oh, I can't wait until I can lift my head. That'll be so cool. She was just, you know, just sitting there. And their big, bright brown eyes. Yeah, that's it.
And enjoying being. I mean, to me, that's the key. When the story is gone and you're just with what is, I mean, even with, if you can accept even being sick or whatever, it's kind of okay to be in bed and just resting, you know, it's the story that gets in the way of the direct experience, and usually the direct experience yields all kinds of pleasures.
Yeah.
You know, the baby's not like you guys are like, now what do we do? And she's not like, she's now not, what do I do? Not. She's just like, blah.
Yeah, right.
Color.
I'm 6 days old, I think.
And if you never ask that question, am I being a good enough baby? You are a good enough baby. And that feeling is good, I think.
She was actually a superb baby. She did it perfectly. It was incredible.
And such a challenge, especially for us Zen students, you know, so you're sick and, you know, I know I'm supposed to let go and then it'll be okay. But quite a thing to give up the doing. Mm. And I think it's so important to see our attachment to the doing and how subtle it can be to reinforce it. And even though it's so painful, I can't just say, well, I'm going to let it go. I can say that, but it doesn't help much. But I think you're right. If we can actually find our way into the moment, I mean, that's the invitation of the freedom of Zen. It's not about you're never going to hurt or you're never going to be forced to ring the bell up and downstairs, but that some possibility being at home there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, those first 3 days when David was sick, it was very peaceful. It reminded me of little baby Rachel, because all you could do was just lie there, and you were at peace. And then as soon as you started feeling
it, yeah, right, the mind came in.
It's like, now I have a little energy, so
yeah, right. So I think I'll suffer.
I think I'll feel bad about being sick. It was a pretty clear transition.
Yeah.
But the baby also cries and screams.
That's right.
And
yeah,
is fully in crying and screaming. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very important point.
So, yeah. Not only joy. But
that's right. That's right. The whole thing. Yeah.
And then it stops.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the next moment comes.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're amazing at that transition stuff.
and there was a certain... There were many, many, many months when she would be in distress, and it was very clear what needed to be done. And then there was this turnaround. I don't know how many of you have had kids, but if you remember that moment when she was inconsolable in her crying... She didn't need to be fed, changed, or held. It was just like existential anguish.
I think it was she about 21.
Yeah.
Days.
Yeah. Actually, I vividly remember that. We were at the beach. Yeah. I didn't understand. You want something to eat? You can type. Just wah. Sometimes it just hurts. Yeah. There's no solution.
Yeah.
My daughter goes from crying to laughter and on a dime. It's amazing. She doesn't hold on to anything. Like,
yeah, that's good. How old is she now?
She's like 16 months.
Yeah. Right. It just flips.
Yeah, it's
just
flips.
Like,
that's gone. I'm done with that day. I don't care what you did for me.
Biggest crisis in the world, and all of a sudden she's, you know,
yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
Spinning around
and dancing. Yeah. And I think it's important to note that the point here is not that we actually become like babies again.
Right.
It's not about regressing and losing control, but about some quality of immediacy. That it's not an either-or kind of thing. It's not that this is not asking us to give up our thinking mind that can help us, you know, pay our taxes and buy groceries and stuff like that. But that we... This is our birthright, this access to a stunning, mysterious, ever-changing world that delights and terrifies us.
And one of the great practices that's, if many of us do shikantaza, just allowing whatever comes to come and whatever goes to go, not interfering, we have a similar experience, but we're conscious of it, which... Right now, your daughter isn't so much of how quickly things do turn when you leave them alone. If I'm having a wonderful, serene experience in shikantaza, it will shift, right? And then, you know, life sucks, and then life will suck for a while, and then, oh, smell, the food smells good in the kitchen, and then it just shifts again. So, and that is the natural way that minds and the emotional field works. Nothing is fixed. I remember when I used to work at hospice with grieving families, and you know, the people, the adults would be grieving, and they would persist in their grieving, but children would grieve, and then they'd be like bored, and then they'd say, "Can I go out and play?" You know, it was one of these amazing things, and I remember asking my supervisor, "What's the deal here?" I said, "Well, they just aren't telling themselves stories about how unhappy they are, so." They miss their mommy or their daddy or their grandparent or whatever, but then, like, suddenly they just want to do something else. And then they go back and they're just in, you know, that sobbing, terrible grief that you see. And then it shifts. And there's something about our practice that teaches us that. Mm-hmm. So exactly what David said, we don't become babies, but we become freer to not fixate on certain ideas, certain behaviors, certain ways of being, and to be, and this is what Zen freedom is. It's not like happy all the time, but it's the capacity to be flexible, the capacity for things to change, to shift, to not be stuck. And if we're stuck, to feel that, and then see what it transforms into next, which is very much related to this koan, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was particularly thinking about the part where you were referring to what really does happen when the transmission falls out and the lead, the wheels fall off, and we actually aren't anymore who we once were and can't necessarily
get it back.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not always that, you know,
that's right.
Who are we when we actually aren't who we were?
Right.
And it that sort of funny image I have, because I've been thinking about it over the last few days, that it's not only just an individual response, but that there's also sort of a cultural, social aspect to that too, which sort of brought home to me, because I just got back from South America, and I had been in Cuba last year, and I was very struck by what they do with old cars when they fall apart, the differences in the two cultures. So in Cuba, probably many of you have seen photos of Havana with these gorgeous old cars from the 50s painted beautifully. It's sort of the classic photo of Havana now, because they have no new parts and no new cars. They do put them together with scotch tape and cards and bubblegum. They look gorgeous. The one time we took a ride in one, it got about a block. And it broke down and they couldn't fix it and we gave up. Just last week I was in Uruguay, where they have tons of old cars that are much, much older. They go back to Model Ts, and they haven't painted them, and they haven't put wheels back on them, and they're sort of scattered around, and in certain places they've turned them into planters. And they have these beautiful, big, you know, they're just on the street, and they're filled with plants. And it just sort of struck, I was just looking at it and thinking, you know, so what does it, that these are just such different responses. You dress it up, you make it look beautiful, but you pretend it's still
nice metaphor.
Toss it away and let it rot, or you turn it into something different. You don't try to recapture what it was, but it can still be beautiful.
Right, right. You know, when David was telling the story about our friend who had the stroke and can't teach anymore, I also was thinking about another friend of ours who's even older. She's in her 90s, and her body's completely fall apart. She's like one of those Model Ts. And and she just she's in pain all the time, and, you know, it really, really struggling. And she just kind of, a little bit like Diane going up and down the stairs with the bell, you know, when it's time to get up and go to dinner. It takes a long time, and we kind of walk together, go to this place, and it's a different way of embracing change. She's surrendered to it. She and I have talked about it. She says, you know, what's ahead for me, right? We don't know, and we kind of know for sure, right? We're all going down that same road, So, I'm alive now, and I'm very limited. And I've just never met anybody so matter-of-fact about... Well, a couple of older people that I've known in my life have been like that. But most of us paint the tires and try to spray paint the rear end, and then we go for a block.
That's right, yeah.
But this particular woman, she just goes all the way down the corridor to the dining hall. You know, it's just very impressive.
Yeah, but I think that's so important to mention. We're not talking about a perpetual cycle. Oh, right. Get the flu, then David, you feel better, and that's fine. That all of us in this room, I don't want to surprise anybody, are getting older.
And look, there's a few people.
and none of us are the person that we were. And sometimes we say the cost of entry into this moment is to give up who we think we are. Because all of our thoughts of who we are based on what's come up until now. But that's a stiff price. But the payoff is pretty spectacular too. That the payoff is life. Yeah. That's probably a good place to stop.